Ernest Morton, Reel 2. Yes, earlier, Ernest, you were talking about your first awareness of Hitler when you looked out of the window and saw the demonstration of this very small group then. Were you aware of the growing strength of Hitler, you know, leading to the events of 1933? Could you tell me about this now?
Yes. What happened then, of course, is suddenly the impact of so-called national socialism, which is just a meaningless word, and we call them the Nazis, which is much more apt, they had very much on their side, suddenly, the industry in Germany, who were petrified that rising out of the unemployment and this general situation, that sooner or later it was going to happen that the communists would become stronger and stronger. And the communists at that time started getting from the fourth or fifth biggest party. We had lots of parties in Germany, much more than in Britain, about 131 parties.
Would you have been aware as a young boy of
yes.
this? Because
yes.
it's your image of
oh,
it
yes.
what well, is we're interested in.
I was really very aware of this. It was kind of funny. Last time when my father went to take us on holiday before all these things happened, he took us to a very luxurious hotel somewhere in Berlin for the summer holidays. And very, very nice. And one day I think I went to go to the kitchen to get something to the waiter. Went there and there's the head waiter. And the head waiter was reading the paper of the Communist Party, the red flag, of course, the last quote in Germany. So I went to him and said, I'm also a communist. I was very aware.
Mm.
And what happened was then, of course, suddenly, overnight, you heard and saw Nazi propaganda wherever you could see it. So both parties, the Communist Party and the Nazi Party, had a peculiar habit Saturday afternoon on Sunday to drive around in big lorries and red flags or Nazi flags determined on the party and shouting slogans. You keep going up and down the streets, and I remember the slogan which I shouted. I was on the Communist line, of course. And the slogan that the Social Democrats, which was the Labour Party, and was the biggest party in Germany, had betrayed us, but the Communists will deliver us from that, you see. I was very enthusiastic about that. And the Nazis shouted down with the Jews, you see. And equally both very loud, you see. And then later on, it came very often to battles, and very often people were killed at that time. All the hooligans, which are now doing some other things here, went into politics, where they could legitimately kill people, you see, and get blown up on their party as heroes. That started that, you see. And then anti-Semitism was still not on the agenda. But what happened was, it looked, of course, that the communists became stronger and stronger. Actually, they ended up as the third largest party in Germany. But most of their supporters were unemployed, and they had no influence on the unions, which were throwing the end of the German Labour Party, Social Democrats. So they were overestimated here, you see, the communists, you see. But the Nazis used it, of course, very much for their own gains, because they approached the industries like Krupp and all the big car manufacturers and all the people who did machinery for export, and were petrified that they would lose their orders because of the world crisis. And so they managed to get suddenly huge amounts of money, millions, to support them. And once they had that, they had planes flying the air with the signs of Hitler and so on, which was something novelty. Nobody had used airplanes for that. And it became more and more noticeable, you see. And then Hitler started creating the brown shirts, which were uniformed Nazis in brownish shirts and trousers, and terrible ugly hats, would run around and were sort of organized and marching. Germans liked that they kind of marching because it gave them a sense of security, because we were all petrified that we would disintegrate into total chaos. And the Nazis give the impression that they were for order, you see. That was a very important motivation in German character, because after the war, when it looked for a short time that the communists might take over. Everybody expected that after the Russian Revolution. That's why the generals told the emperor to leave Germany. They couldn't guarantee his safety.
Yes, so but if I could, yes, if you keep to your own right. knowledge of what was going on, if you don't mind.
I was aware of that because of the rallies on the street and the noise on the street. I could see myself that they grew and grew and grew, became more and more important. But still, you see, it was what I heard from Hitler, read from Hitler, rather in newspapers, because the papers were like the liberal papers, he found to be very ordinary, and found to be, he didn't look as if he looked really like a little Charlie Chaplin, but to imitate him, he looked grotesque rather than frightening, you see. And everything about him looked sort of peculiar. So people said, yes, I mean, he's obviously only he wouldn't have played on this, obviously, you see. So this was, in the meantime, it became stronger and stronger, and each election, which was a normal democratic election, which was suddenly his party just grew in enormous size, which you couldn't understand, you see. And outside Berlin, which Berlin was very sophisticated, outside Berlin, they felt critically to them in Berlin, because he appeared as a sort of the savior. He said, sort of, leave it to me, I will bring everything back to normality, you see. And we don't want to be involved as these communists who are just hooligans. And you see, the communists tried still to give the impression that they were a very progressive, modern party who was different from anybody else. But it's too sophisticated to appeal to the masses, really, apart from the people who lost their job and would do anything. And the Nazis were involved in the Ulstal, as the Germans couldn't remember. So therefore, this marching about and this music, everybody thought was really quite nice, really. So that is a good old days, you know, as it used to be. So they, on the whole, the Germans felt, if Hitler comes to power, probably not, he probably won't come to power, but if he comes, he will be for order. And there will be, people can go over the street again, you won't be mocked, you won't be robbed. This is will really be as it used to be, you see. That was the thing. He knew that. And he had a man called Goebbels, who advised him, who was very, very advanced in propaganda, but a genius which always used in the world of a positive person. But he was abnormally clever how to manipulate people. It was brilliant. Actually, some of his methods are still now used in the commercial way, because he found that this was give us what guideline, you see. I met him, funnily enough, I met him once or twice in Berlin, because he went to a dentist, which I passed very fast, and he just came usually out and I passed there and stood there waiting for his bodyguard to play impatient. But he looked very intelligent, and funnily enough, he looked very Jewish. That was a funny thing. He looked, he was sitting very with dark eyes, he's quite small, with his whole figure, you would give his thought, he was a typical Jewish chap, you see. Most German Jews didn't look as Jewish as he did, you see. But he was brilliant. I mean, when he spoke on the radio, and I listened to him, I was quite impressed that I couldn't be a Nazi if I wanted one, but I could see that he had very, very, very convincing good speaking and very formal speech and alcoholic. So he was really sent by the Nazis to Berlin to take Berlin politically over, because Berlin was renowned to be very democratic and prosperous, you see. So they wanted to break the power of these people. And he did it. He did it very, very, very short time, you see. He was the man who really, before they came to power already, you see, had very much power, very much power. So in the meantime, I became interested still in the communists because of my brother. And then when I found out that the communists were really not what I expected, because of my brother, they gave me immediately sort of the leader of a group of about 20 boys. And I didn't deserve it, I had no idea. But because my brother was a higher functionary, so they felt I should get it. And there was another boy who was of Russian origin, his mother worked for the Russian embassy. He was born in Russia, but lived most of his youth in Germany. He was more German than Russian. And he was the other one who was in charge of us, you see, me and him. And there was an older man who looked, gave us advice, do this and do that. And since we were both very clear and very curious, like we discussed once day together, that you know it's funny, Billy, we are supposed to run this show here, but in reality we don't do anything, we just do what the others tell us. That is not really democratic. And I asked him, is it in Russia like this? And he said to me, I don't know really, I must ask my mother. Personally, I think it's German. The Germans are always a bit extreme. The person I was born, when this competition took place. And he said, I asked my mother. And next year I asked him, have you spoken to your mother? Yes. What did your mother say? It's the same in Russia. And from that moment onwards, I had enough of communism. I felt the whole thing was a little bit of a show, you see. And when I saw my brother later on and told him that, he said, no, you don't understand that. It's not like this. It's much we're running by a committee like that, and it's not run by one man like Hitler, and we are much more democratic. It's not quite like this, but you will find out. So that was one of my first lessons in politics. And then one day, I came home from school on the 30th of January, 1933, and my mother opened the door and said, the president of Germany has today appointed Adolf Hitler as chancellor. What do you think about it? She criticized my attitude, which I didn't realize. I was 15 at the time. And I said to her something which I'm still ashamed of, but I believed it. And said, don't worry about it. I said, 4 weeks he's finished, you see, he will last longer. And my mother was very, very concerned, very, very pleased to hear that. So then I wrote a letter to my brother who lived in the other part of Germany by that time, and the stronghold of communism. This was the industrial part of Germany, Western Germany, near Belgium, so called the Ruhr. They were all the heavy industry, and there communists were strongest, and he was there to run the propaganda for the communism. So I wrote him a letter and said, oh, yes, Hitler can be part of it. I'm not very afraid of it. I'm sure he doesn't last longer in 4 weeks or 5 weeks. And the brother sent me a letter and said, it's very stupid what I said, because he won't go away and he will stay in the room. It's a very serious situation. He was right, by the way. And then, 3 weeks after he came to power, he had organized, Hitler had organized during the years before he came to power, a security system which had total control over everything. It is started by stealth, a dictatorship, which people didn't realize at the time that it was a dictatorship, but they felt uneasy because suddenly the other parties were more or less eliminated by arresting most of their leader, as in anybody who was in the Nazi party and was in one of the other party found themselves overnight in concentration camps. The first victims were not the Jews, were the activists who were in the other parties and were against Hitler. They were really the first victims for the Nazis. Some were killed, some were beaten to death, and some were then left out where absolutely not the same person as they came in and were demoralized for the rest of their life.
Did you see any of these people yourself, Ernest?
Incredible. Like, really incredible. I was astonished. I remember one actor. He was a very good actor, actually, and was great detectives. But he was left with, he never made a secret of this. He was also in a great human and so a very nice person. He liked me very much, I liked him very much. And suddenly a man saw him on the street, and he looked absolutely, totally changed. He had lost so much weight that he looked like a skeleton, and looked so depressed. And when he went into a sort of, youngsters went usually to little restaurants which sold ice cream. Ice cream was a great luxury. And I went with him to this restaurant and had an ice cream with him. And he told me I was in concentration camp and so on. And I was gasping. He was non-Jewish, nothing but Jewish. He was just that friend, you see. And this was my first meeting with somebody who had just been released from the concentration camp. And the sad thing was he managed to escape to Holland from there because he was afraid he might be put in back again to one of these concentration camps. And when he met then the first German refugees who were in Holland, and he Jewish at that time, who were already stealing, the sooner or later we will be the victims, they met him. He was very well known, he was a very well known actor. And he made them sure he was a Nazi agent. And he was just sent there to spy on them. And later on he went back to Germany, he couldn't stand it there either, you see. And then I met he was killed by them, you see. So that was my first practical experience of that. And then, of course, I knew what was happening. And my brother was not arrested because he escaped them. He was with him secret somewhere. See, I didn't hear anything about him, but we knew he had been arrested there and hoped he wouldn't be arrested. And he managed to survive till April. It was February, what I said before. In April, they worked illegally in groups of five people together. And what happened was one of the five would have contact to another five. So they were always informed, and at the same time, it was very difficult to eliminate. And he had a very peculiar habit, my father, he was always unpunctual, you see. So we arrived at the pastor, at the 12 o'clock meeting for the top of the pub. And he was there 10 minutes later, and just saw the two, three of the group were just taken away by police from there. So there were only two left, and he knew that the other one must have betrayed. And later on he found out that this other man had worked with him for years together and had helped Spider-Man, you see? And he knew all everything about him. And a few days later he was arrested too, you see? So then he was put in the concentration room for 10 months, which was the first. Everybody was a politician or had some influence in the media. And they wanted to know if anybody had ever written an article in a newspaper not agreeing with Hitler or making jokes of Hitler. They had them all in their books and immediately arrested them. Years after that movement, they just did this. Systematic error that people were afraid to say anything which might be misinterpreted, misunderstood, and that it is really a criticism of the Nazis and entitled people to arrest them immediately. So, of course, people became very careful, never said anything which was or could be exaggerated, and the atmosphere changed. It was just like a different country. It was just absolutely impossible. One of the things he told the pastor was about one or two days before Hitler was appointed by the president of Germany to become chancellor, there the communists for the first time organized a demonstration in the leading place where people used Hitler as the equivalent of the the place around Whitehall, where people sort of demonstrate. They had a big place where people, every party who wanted to do something from time to time would use it, and everybody would demonstrate there. And that day, 150,000 or 160,000 people demonstrated in this place, amalgamating social democrats, Roman Catholics, communists, all demonstrating against Hitler and demonstrating for a free democratic Germany to continue. And everybody who went there or heard about it said, oh yes, that shows you Hitler will never come to power. And then a few days later, nobody wanted to know that he had ever taken part in this demonstration. And people became quickly members of the Nazi Party. And the communists particularly, and I asked my mother how can it happen. My mother said something very wise to me, just 15. Said, oh, that's not good. I'm not surprised about it because the communists and Nazis are both extreme, and it's not difficult for a communist to become a Nazi or a Nazi to become a communist, which was absolutely true. You see, this was very, very clever because of course that's what it was. And then suddenly they found good things of Hitler. You see, after all, he's doing this and that. I must say that. And having this very, very strong support from the banks, from the industry, he was. Had so much money that his bodyguards and his little army and his stormtroopers on uniforms were paid by him. You see, because the people got little miniature houses, like a sort of military caserne, and they got pocket money, they had uniforms, they were totally important, and felt marvelous and started hitting and adultering anybody they found who was against them, you see. So that was, this was quite deliberately.
Do you remember the boycott, the Jewish boycott? Yes. Did that have an effect in Berlin?
Yes, that was the first thing. Then, this was that time, and came an election, of the last election in Germany, which was free. And the amazing thing was, because it was still a secret, it was the last time, so Hitler never got a majority in that election, you see. And that gave people hope again, but he ignored it, of course, and right, he finished and started arresting the other parties and eliminated it from one day to another. There was only one party, the Nazi party, right? And that time, first reports came out from all over Germany into foreign countries. Jews in smaller places had been beaten up. Jews in smaller places were beaten up and sometimes killed, which was unheard of in Germany, totally unheard of. And then, of course, the Germans just left the place where they lived as quickly as possible. Some people who were fortunate enough money had money abroad, which was forbidden. Other people tried to come back without money. And a fair number of people escaped abroad. And then, of course, they told what happened behind the scene, which we didn't know in Berlin. Berlin was still very different. And I told them that they were beaten up, and this relative was killed, and so on. And this was published in England and France, all over the world. And then the Nazis started, this was a lie. It's not true. And as punishment for that, they decided to have on the 1st of April, an occasion for which they will show to the Jews that they're not going to allow any further these swindles and these lies which were told about them. There was no, everybody was happy in Germany. It was total lie, never happened in Germany. It didn't exist, you see. And then that day was the first time, the 1st of March, 1st of April, where they started the brown troops to split in groups of 10 or 12 or 15 or something like this, and went through all of Berlin and smashed the windows of Jewish shops. And people stood outside with big signs, don't buy from Jews, you see. They are our bad luck. They are all, they're responsible for everything which has happened in Germany. They were behind the breakdown of the banks, and they do this and that. And that was the first action, really, organized action, where they quite deliberately was aimed against Jews and Jews only. And I was at that time elected Jewish. I was so puzzled. I did something very stupid, which could have been very fearful. The counts of hooligans with the SS ran through Berlin to smash the shops, and I went with them to watch them. I was with them all the time. The some of these groups, you see, to see what happened. And one thing which made a great impression on me, I still see the shop, and I still, when I'm in Berlin, always when I go past this, I think about it. There was one shop where they were trying to break in and so on, and they were all these. An elderly man stood there with his umbrella and started hitting the nuts, you see. And he was obviously an ex-retired sort of officer or general. You could see it. I mean, he was very. He just shot at him, "Are you mad? What are you doing here? I mean, this is incredible. You're a German, you don't do these things here." And they were totally confused, these Japs. They didn't really know what to do. They knew this man knows, you see. And the Germans were so educated that if they hear certain voices with authority, quiet authority, so you have to obey. That's the person you have to, you know, you are very much beloved in the open order. And suddenly felt very uneasy. And you know, they went away, they sort of got so very embarrassed. And the other one still said, "I mean, stop this childish behavior, you really let us down." And it was so furious in him, he risked his life to the march off. And I was very interested, it was the only thing active activity against the Nazis, you see, it was very good. And then the other thing is, we had a general upstairs, who looked like a general, with a monocle in his eyes and so on. He looked just like a captain, like a general. He was always very polite when he lived, he would let my mother in first, salute and so on. And suddenly, our door bell rang, and the general was there in full uniform, came in and said, "If you have any problem, any 46, let me know immediately. I shall interfere." You see? This is, I mean, we were reassured, of course, you see. I mean, the people who were the sort of masters of Germany, really, were on our side, you see. Little did we know that they had thought, our city army had I had joined Hitler because he thought, now when Hitler's in power, we will get more power again. And he understood that Hitler, they always thought, he's a little joke. And once he, if we still him, we can do what we like. Right?
Yes, this is interesting, isn't it? How he was underestimated and how you had this sense of security,
yes,
that someone like that,
yes,
was supporting you.
Well, I wouldn't have liked it, but I really expected a person like this of his type. He was always very polite, very friendly, usually. And I was quite sure that he was still in power.
When did the restrictions really start to bite? You know, the law, the Nuremberg laws, when they came in.
But before they don't, of course. You see, what happened then, I say really from, except you really think, after the so-called election, when he theoretically didn't win, really. He had never the majority, you see. But he didn't, he wouldn't get tuppence anymore. He went through the motion, probably to find out, I don't know what he did. Maybe he wanted to know himself whether what the standing was like. You see, and expect, I think, more. Well, he didn't need to have to show them his ridiculous set, you see. Because I can't see any other explanation for this. It's very odd. It was then, as I said, this was the first thing, as against the Jews. And the second one was, for me, the first disappointment, because all these things were put on my own. I had the ambition to work in films, you see, not as an actor, but as a technician. I had little parts which enabled me to get to know the people, and that's the funny thing there. Once you know people, you're very unstructured, you see. There were no trade unions, and you got into the film industry by chance, and if you were any good in it, you survived and went from sense of things.
And had you left school at this stage, this would have been...
Only in Eastern 1933, when I went to school after the holidays, they told me I can go home, Jews were not coming anywhere, I can go to Jewish school if I want to leave. And then I had, by that time, first of all, at the start, I just hoped I would go in the film industry, I was registered with people. And of course, then all the Jews were eliminated, and not eliminated and so far that they were not allowed to be in films anymore, which was a very great problem for the film industry, because the film industry and the theater industry had always attracted Jews, because they liked acting, they liked the whole atmosphere of this films and things. Because, as you know, Hollywood too was practically in a control of Jews. Not because they're Jews, it just worked really. It was their medium, they found it was exciting. And there was no conspiracy of Jews in the film industry. They just was competitive with one another to get wanted to succeed. This was always misinterpreted, because the Jews are very individual people and like success, but they are not very much helping one another or anyone else. Some do, some don't. All this on this sort of rubbish about Jews, because they're not an organized body. I mean, I wasn't in it, but even the ones I knew who were in it were really either religious or traditional, but were not at all, never had any feeling for taking over, because politics was a good war thing. Some Jews were interested in it, and some Jews would have been heavily Nazi if they had the permission to do so.